You're now listening to The Brian Callen Show, rated the number one podcast of all time.
Of all time. Make sure you're ready, because this is the podcast where you are guaranteed to learn virtually everything.
Well, today's podcast is brought to you by Hover.com. Hover is domain management made simple. It is the easiest and quickest way to buy a domain name. If you've ever registered a domain, you know that companies just try to upsell you with stuff you don't need or that should be included in the domain. Hover is honest. It never tries to upsell you at checkout. Everything the other guys extra charge for is included in the cost of your domain, like Whois privacy and domain forwarding. And plus, Hover has the best customer support in the industry. They have a no-hold phone policy. That means if you run into a problem, you call Hover and a real live human being answers the phone, ladies and gentlemen. I actually get excited. It's just so rare, right? So basically, it takes the hassle out of getting a domain. That is what they are selling. You just type in a few keywords you want in the search box, and it'll tell you what's available. And the cool thing is they specialize in .NET. So a lot of times you want something in .com or .org. It's not available. Try .NET. That is their specialty. And Hover has valet transfers. What does that mean? Well, if you've got a domain somewhere else, they'll take care of the whole process of moving the domain to Hover for you. All right. So they specialize in .NET and they now offer Google Apps. You can get Gmail, Calendar, Drive, Docs, the whole package. You got 25 gigabytes of storage. And, you know, Google's a huge company. Let's be honest. Hard to get a hold of a real person, I'm sure. But Hover has a human being that specializes in Google Apps. So if you got a business, you got a family, you got a group, you want the ability to share all kinds of stuff with, try Hover.com. See how it works. They'll give you a 30-day free trial with the Google Apps as well. So, you know, see what you think. And the best part, guess what? If you go to Hover.com/Brian, B-R-Y-A-N, well, that's a promo code that gets you 10% off a new domain name. Oh, man, the power I have to get you 10% off. Thank you, Hover.
Let's just start with me saying this is the Brian Callen Show. You like that, Alexis? The Brian
Callen. Good.
Yeah. Well, because I couldn't think of a better name, so it's the Brian Callen Show. How egotistical.
No, you know what? I love, Mayor Bloomberg, of course, was a very successful entrepreneur, and it's hard to not notice that because everything was named after him, right? Bloomberg Terminal.
So true, dude.
Bloomberg the company, News Network.
That's exactly right, and that makes sense. So you know what? Yeah, this is the Brian Callen Show, and in parentheses, Hunter Motz. Hunter's the one who gets all my guests. Hunter's way smarter than
okay.
me.
Hunter, it's okay.
Literally, when Hunter signed on, this podcast got actually legit because he gets great guests, and I was always like, I'll get my comedian friends on. Let's talk about a man who was a co-founder of Reddit and an internet pioneer. And by way of Armenia, ladies and gentlemen, and then Brooklyn, he's an American Armenian, Alexis Ohanian. How are you,
Thank
my friend?
You. I'm doing
from the house
well.
Of from the house of Ohan.
You know, it is the eon ending is basically son of.
Yeah,
that's what I meant, dude.
That's what he meant.
That's what I meant.
You're a scholar. No, I mean there are not many. Most people, the Armenians, we're not exactly. We don't roll deep. There's not a lot of.
Well, you've been surrounded basically by people who were,
friends.
Yeah, your history has been one of genocide, one of just having this. There was such a diaspora. It's not been easy being Armenian. That's for sure. It's why you find Armenians in every country in the world because basically, people weren't so nice to you, your neighbors.
It is true. If we were playing, I like to think of it like a game of Risk. If you were going to start out anywhere, starting out in Armenia, not the best location.
the tiny country.
Resource poor, mountainous, tiny, and surrounded by people who do not like you.
It's so true, man. It's so true.
Sounds like middle school.
But, and a gateway, actually, this is very much like middle school, and a gateway to, the Caucasus were long a very strategic and valuable sort of place to travel through connecting between Europe and Asia. And a bunch of empires roll through every few hundred years.
Yeah. Yeah. You know how but, humane you know, so they good. Were. They were so sweet back then.
Yeah. It was a different time. Those are the days. But look, we have Kim Kardashian now.
I was gonna say. She's now on the flag, the Armenian flag, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen. Her outline, at least.
I actually wonder, how is Kim Kardashian perceived in Armenia?
Oh, funny you mention that. So when I left Reddit to go volunteer back in the motherland for 3 months as a Kiva fellow, a great nonprofit, microfinance. And everyone I talked to there loved Kim Kardashian. Everyone,
so funny.
I would say, this is a generalization, but most people were really proud, really excited because here she was, this beautiful, and she's attractive.
Yeah.
This beautiful, very popular, famous Armenian woman. The thing is, I don't know how many of them actually knew how she got famous.
I was going to say.
Oh, my God.
It's not clear to me that they knew about the sex tape because it is still a pretty traditional, old school kind of country.
You mean she blew a rapper on film, a black rapper on film, and that wouldn't fly in Armenia?
Yeah,
that's so weird.
Yeah, I think that might be...
Yeah.
I don't know. It may not go over great.
That they reshot scenes with the owner of Vivid was basically like, look, we're just going to get leaked anyway. Let's reshoot it and you'll make $12 million. I was like, that's outrageous, but for $12 million, I might just do it.
Would you blow a black rapper for $12
million? Yes, I would. Yeah.
So, Alexis, you know, October 1st, your book came out without their permission.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. I love that title, by the way. What a great title.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I can take credit for that. I cannot take credit for the amazing cover, although I did mascots for all of my own companies. It was actually a designer at Business Plus. He just did a badass job with those icons. And there's no title because, you know what? They were just like, let's just be unconventional. And I was like, all right, why not?
That's kind of what
let's
you...
Let's hope it doesn't bite me in the ass.
Yeah, but that's kind of what your strength is. I mean... You know, there is a side to this world that, you know, we talk about how corporatized things become and, you know, big banks are too big to fail. And so what that means then is that the little guy can't get a loan unless he's got assets. So when I travel this country, this whole country has become an expression of one corporation after another. I mean, you can't find a mom and pop store for your life because they can't get loans. You open a restaurant and good luck because you're competing with these huge corporate entities that have the ability to deal with lawsuits and all kinds of stuff. So we're losing, in a sense, at least on the American landscape, what I would consider flavor. I mean, I just feel like we're all numbers, you know, and I think that's a common sort of this notion of I get somewhere and I'm surrounded by beige walls, and it really doesn't matter if it's Kmart or Target or Walmart. I understand that there is plenty of stuff to go around for everyone and it might be cheaper, but like everything, we pay a price for too much candy. And so, you know, one of the things that I think I really appreciate about people like yourself is that there is this sort of rebel maverick notion of, listen, freedom and expression and individual expression and the ability to profit off your own ingenuity and stuff, that's what makes the world go round. And I wondered if you'd talk a little bit about your philosophy and sort of how you founded Reddit and how it came about. I would imagine some of it's an accident, but a lot of it was just sort of this notion of pushback, right?
Yeah, you know, a lot of it was, I wouldn't say quite accidental, but definitely serendipitous. You have to realize, like, Steve and I started this thing right out of college. So we were just out of UVA. We had just graduated, just moved up to Medford, Massachusetts, which is a suburb of Somerville, which is a suburb of Cambridge, which is a suburb of Boston.
Been there.
You know? Yeah. Oh, you know Medford. Uh-huh. Medford.
No, the whole area, yeah.
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 Oh, yeah. And so, like, that's where Reddit started. I recently found the apartment that we rented, the top floor of, on Google Maps. Wow. It's a nice little street view, 72 Bristol. I hope no one goes and harasses the people who live there. That's where Reddit started, and Steve and I... wrote the first lines of code for it there. But so we didn't really know what we were doing. We really had no business starting a company. This was the first, you know, we've been making websites ourselves, but this was like the first real web application that either Steve or I had built with actual users on it, like people who we one day hoped to be customers. And all we knew was that we were building the front page of the internet. And that was a very bold.
I love that, by the way. I love that expression and that sort of mission statement. We're going to build the front page of the internet. It's just, it's wonderfully ambitious and also so
and
incredibly
crazy.
Naive for yeah. young guys, yeah. right? Which yeah. is which is
for
great.
For a couple 22-year-olds. And we had, and I can't stress that enough, you know, people hearing this interview, people see me on stage, just people, whatever. They see someone who's had a certain amount of success, and I think we far too often assume that they like started out this way.
Yeah.
And they don't realize all the failures and all the mistakes and all the naivete. But we had all of that. And, you know, the whole reason we were even working on that was because we'd applied to Y Combinator with another idea. We'd worked for about a year on a company that was called My Mobile Menu, or
That's good.
It was a great idea. Great idea. Which would let people order food from their cell phones so they wouldn't have to wait in lines. Like, you're five blocks from the Starbucks, you push a couple buttons, and there's a Frappuccino waiting for you when you get there.
Awesome.
Now,
yeah.
Today, I think there are a number of startups that are doing this and working on this, and it's going pretty well. But in 2005, the smartest phone on the market was a Trio, Palm Trio, like a stylus. So the timing was way off, and we would have had to do, I don't know what, all kinds of unseemly things to get onto phones.
Yeah, the infrastructure just wasn't there yet for your idea.
There's no app store, smartphones. So anyway, we lucked out because Y Combinator basically told us, this thing you've been working on for the last year with the great name, that's it's not going to work. And they rejected us.
Wow.
From that interview that we thought had gone pretty well. They called us up that night and said, sorry, we don't want you to be part of Y Combinator, which was the seed stage accelerator. All that means is they give a little bit of money, $10,000 or $20,000, for a few founders just to like live for 3 months and build, and then pitch a demo at Demo Day. And it's produced multi-billion dollar companies like Dropbox and Airbnb. But back then, this was the first round of it. But we knew we wanted to be a part of this because we knew they were onto something. And thankfully, we dropped that idea of the last year and got started on Reddit. And it was Paul who, you know, in a meeting with us basically said, listen, don't make anything for mobile. It's not ready yet. Make something for the web and make something that solves your own problems. And Steve read Slashdot every day. And I was just opening a bunch of news tabs every morning, and neither one of us were happy with finding out what was sort of the news of the day, what was the zeitgeist of news, because the internet doesn't have just one front page. You know, if it was on the front page of the New York Times, arguably for the whole 20th century, like, that was news.
Right.
And the internet is much more broad than just what is in the pages or would be on the front page of the Times. Mm-hmm. It could just be an amazing cat video or some, you know, Korean pop star, his music video. Like, who knows?
Right. Or Kim Kardashian's sex tape.
Yeah, there you go.
Kim, it always comes back to Kim.
Always comes back to the promiscuous Armenian
it
girl.
It always comes back to Kim's
must
backside.
We always bring this up? Yeah, anyway. Yeah, so.
But yeah, that's the truth. And so, you know, a couple of naive guys who just graduated from college, Steve and I just said, all right, yeah, sure, we can make the front page of the internet. We have no idea what we're doing, but sure.
It's awesome.
We can figure that out.
But the genius of it was kind of allowing your viewing public to choose what that front page is in a way, right? I mean,
yeah.
You know?
It was laziness. It was the fact that we knew, and we had seen, you know, so Slashdot did an amazing job. We had a great community of commenters, but it was a site that was very targeted towards geeks. It was called News for Nerds, Stuff That Matters. That was their tagline. And they had a group of editors who would ultimately choose what got posted. And so we had actually, and I have the original, I found the email and I put it in the book because I've had to explain this for like years now. We really had no idea Dig existed when we launched. They came on my radar, and this is my fault for not really doing a good competitive analysis. They came on our radar maybe 2 weeks after we launched, and I realized, holy shit, like, these guys, they've got this tech celebrity founder who launched it on his television show like 6 months earlier. They've got a ton more traction. They've already got funding, and they're in the valley. And it was a moment that terrified us for about, I don't know, an hour. And I sent this email to Steve, you know, my co-founder, and then Paul, who is the guy from Y Combinator, Paul Graham, who pretty much was our chief advisor. And he gave me some really good advice. He told us, he was like, you know, your competitors will never beat you. Like, you will beat you. It was very, very monk-like advice. It was just like, don't let your, don't even think about your competition.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
just, like, don't even pay attention to them. Because when you do, you're going to stop innovating and you're going to start copying. You're going to start worrying too much about what they're doing. And I'll tell you, in hindsight, you look at all of the big clones that sprung up. There were, at one point, there were like half a dozen sites that basically had aped the functionality of Dig to one extent or another. Netscape even went through a brief rebranding.
Yeah.
It was very ill-fated.
Yeah.
It was just another Dig clone. And where all of the competitors failed was because they were just copying a broken model. And, and I think where Reddit succeeded was because we didn't have anything to build from. We didn't. We had ignorance, and so we thought, how do we make this thing work as well as possible? Mm. And that's what made Reddit Reddit.
You know, I think that's so. That's such an important point for life. I always make it a point never to really actually watch other people stand up, even my friends who are great and everything. Because I always stayed. In fact, my heroes were never comics. My heroes were always people like, you know, De Niro and, you know, just great authors and stuff. And I think that my ignorance as a comic, just the idea, I just made sure I was, you know, and I continue to do this. I stay deliberately ignorant. And whether it's writing a script or whatever it might be, it really is important to not pay any attention to what's being done, because you will, without even realizing, you do need to study the people before you and how they did things so you can avoid mistakes. But when it comes down to being, at the end of the day, my whole deal is, I just hope I can look back on my life and think I did something at least somewhat original in my own arena. That's kind of the idea as a man. You want to kind of, leave a whatever. But
make your dent in the universe, man.
What's that?
Make your dent in the universe.
That's it. And you know, hopefully, and I think that's a really important thing to sort of, in some ways, cloister yourself from outside influence in that sense. Because you will. You'll mimic, man. You'll mimic. So
I mean, look at Carlos Mencia, you know? It's just,
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. But now you sell Reddit to, I think, Condé Nast. You're a young, handsome guy, and you probably have a staff. You probably wear a cape and a robe around your home.
Guilty as charged. I'm wearing the blue cape today.
That's what I'm talking about. You probably have grounds. You have grounds, not even land, just grounds.
I live in Brooklyn, man. I live in Brooklyn. There are no grounds.
Ah, damn it. Damn it.
Yeah, but it's, you have
but everything else is true.
Everything else is true.
But you valet park your horse.
Exactly.
Horse,
just like
by a horse,
every other guy.
You mean helicopter.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is my helicopter
my
cell phone
number.
Well, I'm sure you've made your money, and now, you know, how old are you now?
I'm 30.
Yeah, I mean, come on, dude. You're 30. I know that I'd spend most of my time with just a lot of hookers, a lot of blow, and just somewhere in like Bhutan or something. And the question becomes, what are you going to do now?
Well, you've given me some great inspiration. I hadn't even considered.
Come on, dude. This is the Brian Callen show.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, I don't get me wrong. I've had some fun. And actually, the very first thing I did was I upgraded. I'm a big Skins fan. I wish we were a little better than 1-3, but that's okay. The first thing I did was upgraded my dad's season tickets. And so now the two of us, and then two of my best childhood friends, the four of us go and act a fool.
Good man.
Every home game.
Good. You're talking about the Redskins?
I am, and we are right behind the visitor bench. So my taunting game is... I don't want to brag, but I might as well get a lease inside of the heads of most of these guys.
You climb right into their kitchen, right into their back door. Do you say stuff like, I'm Alex Ohanian and I'll buy your team and turn you into a farm league?
No. Oh, okay. No, well, that's the best part. The best part is they look at me and they're just like, some drunk dude who probably like spends his whole week just waiting. Actually, who was that? Hey, Burleson, someone was shouting back at me last week or a couple weeks ago on the Lions. I think it was Burleson. He was like, you must spend all week like getting ready for this and looking forward to this. And I'm like, yes, I do. But I mean, I got other stuff going on.
Yeah, exactly. But I do, because I made millions before I was 30. You loser. And my knee's still working. I don't have any concussions. I rule. Now I'll buy you, and you guys are gonna wear pink.
No, I don't want to see. But also, it It is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So football players will be wearing paint this October.
You see how he flipped that on me?
Part of the fight. But look, I would rather. I really prefer to just get in their heads in a less, it's still antagonizing. It's always PG because I know there are kids around and cursing, all kinds of crazy stuff will get you kicked out real quick. But like, I like to bring a message. I don't know if you guys are NFL fans.
Yeah,
there's an Eagles player, Riley Cooper,
mm-hmm.
Who got into some trouble in the offseason because he was filmed backstage at a Kenny Chesney concert,
yep.
which
yep.
already is an offense.
already an offense, by the way. That's right.
Flag on that play.
That's already pretty screwed up.
Yep.
But then he was shouting a bunch of racial epithets.
Yep.
A bunch of black security guards around him. And it caused a bit of friction, as you can imagine,
yep.
in the locker room and in the world of sports. And so here he was on the sidelines. And it was an opportunity to ask him, if he had changed his attitude, if he felt like, if he felt like he had grown as a human. And
you're right there. You're literally right behind the bench. Oh, my God.
Yeah, and so I would get to ask him things like whether or not he only caught white footballs or if he caught the brown ones, too.
Yes.
And it was great because then you see his teammates, some of whom actually did kind of stick up for him, but a bunch of others who were just laughing at him. And it's like that. Sowing those seeds in the locker room, that's the kind of thing.
Dude, you're a true fan because you know you climbed into his kitchen a little bit. You know that had an effect on him. He was
right?
he wasn't thinking about the about sort of the plays. He was kind of getting his riled up.
I think he only caught one ball that day.
Exactly. He couldn't read the defense, man.
So how long is it until the Redskins recognize that you're a vital member of the team and, like, give you a jersey and, you know.
You got RG3, man, and his knee's holding up, so he's looking good.
As long as I've developed a weird relationship with a bunch of the security guards.
Mm-hmm.
actually, I've got shout out to Tony, who every Sunday makes sure that I don't get arrested. I don't know anyone in the front office at, like, the Dan Snyder levels. I've met a few executives who have been interested. I've kind of helped a few of them figure out the whole internet thing with social media, blah, 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 blah. But, I didn't make myself draft eligible when I graduated from college. I wanted to put my education to work. I didn't want to just be an athlete. And the offers were there.
You didn't want to use all that fast twitch muscle. Were you an athlete at all? Did you play any sports?
Oh, God, no. Oh, I guess you can't talk about not sitting here with you. Right. No, God, no.
That's
no,
hilarious.
I played.
Every guy wants to be a pro athlete. Every guy.
Quake 2 is a kind of sport.
I sucked. I played football for a minute. My senior year of high school, I finally got my shit together, started exercising, and I made the team. And by make the team, I mean I sat on the bench every game, except for one.
Yeah, didn't play it down.
I know one moment we were blowing out some team, and they put me in, and I got a sack.
Oh,
nice.
It was a Rudy moment, and there was no cheering or anything like that, but in my head, it was spectacular.
Well, that's one of those things that you think about. That's, like, more important than founding Reddit in some ways, right? I sacked the dude.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Both of my parents were in the stands. As far as – that was one of the few games they were able to get to with schedule and all that stuff. And so as far as they knew, I did that every single game. and I just told them, I was like, I sat out the first three quarters because my knee.
I got a trick knee.
It's tough. Yeah. No, but, it is. I'm definitely the Monday morning quarterback.
That's my impression of every single guy in the gym, every frustrated athlete. My impression is it's I ran a 4.3 40 in high school, fastest guy in my state, but my knee got a trick knee, so now I don't really bench anymore. I don't really lift anymore. I used to squat 805, but now I'm back to 400. All right, dude.
You've clearly been to the gym with me.
Exactly. Alexis is actually spots me.
So Alexis, there's this line in your book which seems very much like the thesis of Without Their Permission, which, if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to read on air.
Only if it's a dramatic reading.
Oh, well, then I should hand it to Brian.
I was going to say, I'm a great actor.
He's an amazing actor.
I read it this way, like this. I like Katharine Hepburn, actually. That's it. Let me see. Let me read this.
I should have. You guys do the audiobook, man.
You should have. I would have read it this way. My name is Alex Ohanian.
Wait, there's right. there's a little South Park in there.
I know. It starts with Catherine Hepburn, so forget South Park. Here it is. The promise of such a platform and the reason we must protect it is that it allows awesome ideas to win because people like them, not because some gatekeeper said so. That's exactly right. And I wish I'm going to get that tattooed to my chest.
I will fund that tattoo, sir.
Thank you, sir. But I love that. And that, you know, I'm glad that Hunter picked that out because that is the essence of why these kinds of things need to be protected. That this is a new frontier. There is a world of commerce and that works because you are rewarded for your ingenuity and your risk and your effort. And most importantly, maybe it's a place for an individual to express themselves without censorship. And that's kind of what I think of when I think of you. I mean, you're kind of one of those people that makes the world, in my opinion, a better place for that. And so,
well, thank you.
But it's true, you know, and it's kind of the best of what sort of this culture has to offer. You know, when people love to make fun of American culture, what they forget about is that there's another side of American culture, which is young people with a dream who take chances and work very hard. And that's because there's an incentive structure in this country, you know, that rewards you for that. But that incentive structure is really being eroded, not so in the internet. It's still intact. So, you know, that's kind of what do you plan on? I mean, what do we do about a world where you can put my mugshot on, even though I wasn't convicted of a crime, and I have to pay to get it off? What do we do about this stuff? Do we have to chalk it up to ethics? Do we have to, you know, hope?
It is. I mean, the reality of any of these technologies, any of these communication platforms, whether it's the printing press or all the way here to the internet, is that they're ultimately tools to be used by humans. And there isn't, we can't, you can't really blame Gutenberg for Twilight.
Yes.
But
by the way, for all my listeners, Gutenberg invented the printing press.
And for all your listeners, Twilight is a series of vampire romance
Wait,
novels.
Really? Oh, come on. Or 50 Shades of Grey. I mean, like,
exactly.
The platform can be used to create amazing works of art, amazing things, even just silly things, or not silly things and shitty things and crappy things. But this is, as long as humans are in the equation, there will never be a technological solution that somehow regulates it. Look, to the point of freedom of expression or freedom of access, you look at some of the most oppressive states in the world, like China, when it comes to internet policy, they try really, really hard, right? There are a lot of very smart engineers, a lot of money behind that great firewall to keep people from seeing things like image search results of Tiananmen Square massacre. And yet, every day, dissidents inside of China, in mainland China, use software that is freely available to see anything they want online. Mm. You know, great firewall be damned. And so even the most oppressive states, even they cannot curb and curtail humans for both our curiosity and our willingness to express ourselves. And so I think the most important thing going forward is for all of us to try and figure out how we can be the best stewards of this technology. Because it is extremely powerful. It is capable of letting someone who lives in the middle of nowhere America in a very small conservative town, like, it lets them, under a pseudonym, have honest discussions with people about being gay, for instance, that they could not have.
That's true.
With their name attached or with people who are immediately around them. And that's making the world, for one person, obviously there are many more than just one people, but like just one person, so much better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's just having discussions about themselves. That's not even producing art or a great business or a great nonprofit that's a very personal thing, but it's changing lives. And, if you look at, and especially in the world of comedy, to have the ability to produce and build an audience and a fan base around the stuff that you were just putting out in the world is a really great thing, because like how else were people consuming and sharing these ideas before we had a connected web, right? I mean,
exactly.
Like if I I guess you got lucky enough or knew the right people or had the right connection that you were able to get on Carson or, you know, had like, how many circumstances with how many gatekeepers had to just perfectly line up for you to be able to say what you wanted to say? And then how many more, you know, yes, the world got the Lenny Bruces, got the, I mean, even, you know, Louis C.K., of course, of the current.
But it took Louis, took Louis 20 years before, you know, the internet was what kind of got him out there in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
you know?
No, very true. And especially the $5 digital download campaign. I don't know if he would consider himself a tech nerd, but my tech nerd heart grew three sizes when I saw that because he got it. Like,
well,
that...
I was just talking to Joe Rogan yesterday. I'm about to shoot my next special. And, you know, I can basically initially shoot it and then just put it online before I even go to Comedy Central or Showtime again and sell it, you know?
Well, dude, Aziz Ansari used VHX to do just that. And then Comedy Central still picked it up afterwards.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we did it Louis C.K. style. Did it through the digital download, DRM free, and then Comedy Central still picked it up. And you know what the best part was? Mm. The only negative feedback that you basically got was from fans who had already seen it from a digital download and were just bummed that they had to watch the censored version on Comedy Central.
Yep, that's exactly. Well, that's it. That's kind of what as a performer you with these podcasts and stuff, and you develop. You develop sort of a niche audience. You can develop your own following in a sense because, you know, Hunter and I always talk about, look, man, we could do a podcast. I have the 10-minute podcast I do with Will Sasso and Chris D'Elia. It's a lot of fun, but it's all silliness and stuff. But the idea behind this was, you know, Hunter and I were kind of talking about this sort of mission state. The idea is let's just kind of try to create some inspiration and get really smart people or people who've done things and at least have them share ideas so that this can be sort of a platform for – because I'd get surrounded no matter where I'd go. I'd get surrounded by people after doing the Rogan podcast, and I would talk about books I'd read and stuff. And I would get these like young dudes who were like, "Dude, what do I read? I need the answers. Help me figure. Help me navigate this insane thing called life." And so that's kind of what's great about. I think the biggest challenge with the internet is kind of figuring out what to pay attention to, right? What to read, what to do. You know,
there's a lot of noise. definitely a lot of noise.
Yeah,
and I think that's the interesting thing is that you know it's the internet is very democratic, and you make that super clear. And I think that you know a lot of the critiques that are made of the internet in terms of or the printing press in terms of Twilight is that you know there's an appeal to very sort of short term desires.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what you said earlier about, you know, what Paul Graham said to you guys in terms of fix your own problem, right? Most of our problems are really very long term. And if we really tap into that desire for meaning, that feeling of wanting to understand the world and then try and solve that problem, it's a much harder problem to solve, but the payoff is much, much greater.
Yes. Yeah. Very well put. I mean, the reason I'm going to 75 universities this fall is because the generation in school right now, the promise for getting a degree, taking on that student loan debt, and then, you know, sort of don't worry, you'll get a job, obviously has proven to not really be true.
Yeah.
But we are in such an amazing position in that we really understand how the internet works in a kind of innate way. To paraphrase Bain, you know, they merely adopted the internet. We were born in it, molded by it.
Yeah.
And really,
could you do that in the Bain voice, though?
Or, I'm actually prohibited. My girlfriend got so pissed off at me for doing.
Yeah, but she won't know. She won't know.
Girls get so tired when you get. Yeah, I was doing. I was doing a Russian, a very fat Russian guy the other day. I kept falling asleep.
There's no love.
Yeah,
my
girl was like, "Stop with this character already." Yeah.
But come on, just for us, do it in the Bain voice.
Don't put him on the spot for God's sake. He's an internet genius.
I've had art fights about whether impressions, like where impressions are on the comedy totem pole.
They're so low in my book. I can do so many impressions and I just never do them.
Exactly.
I do Chris Walken as a pigeon and Arnold Schwarzenegger as a bunny rabbit just because I'm like, and now for a hacky bit, everybody. That's literally how I end my show sometimes when I hate the audience. I'm like, you guys want to see Arnold Schwarzenegger as a bunny rabbit? I'm a bunny. I have to eat carrots so I can grow. And that's it. That's what I do. And I bow and I leave.
You walk out. You drop the mic.
I drop the mic and go, follow that, motherfuckers. And I just walk away.
Wow.
But Reddit kind of what I appreciate is that you can have like the Ask Me Anything, the sort of the forums where you'll get like Bill Gates on there, but then you have somebody extracting a blackhead,
yeah.
you know, after 25 years, which, by the way, may be the most riveting thing I've ever seen. I literally was biting my nails going, get it out in Bane's voice.
Nice. Well, that we can bring it back. That is so the challenge is for us and for this generation to figure this out. And the good news is that all of the conventions we were sold nearly all of them have proven to be malarkey. Mm-hmm. Whether it was higher ed mm-hmm. and don't worry, it'll get you a job, whether it was the beauty of home ownership, whether it was like a trust in finance. There's a lot of conventional things that don't really seem to be working out. And you know what? That's okay.
Yeah.
Because they were conventions that some other carbon-based life form came up with and a bunch of other carbon-based life forms perpetuate.
I love the way a futurist like yourself talks. That's so awesome. That is so because implied in that comment is the fact that we are not going to be carbon-based life forms for very long as we mesh with machines.
I just want to be a cyborg.
Of course.
And upload it to the Matrix.
Dude, I read The Singularity Is Near. It changed my life forever. Yeah. I was like, Ray Kurzweil's got some shit to say. I was like, all right.
And don't get me wrong, I'm not quite Singularity University. Like I'm not quite there.
Right.
But I like an optimistic futurist, I'll take it. That's better than nuclear Armageddon.
Well, anyway. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, what's great is that you could go to Harvard, like my friend over here, Hunter Motz, and spend $100,000 or more on an education and you get a great education, but you can it is becoming a reality that you could spend $5,000 or $6,000 and get access to those professors, those lectures, and though you're not necessarily in a community, I think there's a lot of value to being in that community for a lot of reasons, but you can certainly immerse yourself in the best that's been thought and said for a lot cheaper and a lot faster and on your own terms than you would, even 3 years ago.
But I think this actually, I mean, you know, fits into this whole conversation. When you go to a school like Harvard, you know, yes, the community and the experience of being on that campus and being surrounded by those people is great. I mean, what's really good is you build a place like Harvard and, you know, the most competitive, most ambitious kids are the ones who apply and get in.
Right.
And so you've created this basically salon that's made up of these people who really, really care about things.
Yeah.
But really what you're paying for, what that $100,000 for is, you know, branding. You're associating yourself with the brand of Harvard. And people are like, oh, Harvard is good.
Open
you
stores.
Are associated with Harvard. Thus, you are good. Right.
Yeah.
But you know, that doesn't necessarily hold. It's not necessarily true, but it's essentially part of the gatekeeping mechanism. It's, you know, a lot of what we're talking about here because, you know, unless you have a degree from, you know, some fancy institution, there are a lot of jobs that it's going to be very hard to be considered for. You know what I mean? And so that's an area in which barriers have been created, right?
Yeah.
And fundamentally, people believe in those barriers. Most people believe that, you know, they're not going to master quantum physics or they're not going to master computer programming or they're not going to master these fields, and they self-select out. Mm. And that's what gatekeepers are very, very good at doing. They're very, very good at creating this sort of mystique around this world so that you think that you can never do it. And I think that's the real danger of the internet is, yes, their playing field is to some extent open and people can participate, but most people don't believe that they can participate.
Mm. Right.
Yeah, and along comes Alexis.
That's why I've got a giant bus. I mean,
that's right.
There is the great thing is I only have to do so much telling. A lot of it is just showing. And, you know, I have, whether it's people I have come to know, whether it was through the process of the book or just in life, in so many disciplines, in so many industries, who are finding ways to just, like, live up to their maximum potential for awesome. I think it is becoming more and more clear that things, I mean, okay, look, like startups in tech obviously kind of lead the way in a lot of this stuff. And I hope it's a bellwether for every other industry. But I can't even tell you the last time I looked and asked about a GPA or the kinds of things that typically were important and valued fade in comparison to what you have actually done or what you have been doing. And those tend to be things that, again, you don't need permission for. It's like the thinking of, you know, how much has changed in the last 5 years alone, just 5 years, to enable artists, to enable any creatives to build audiences, to build brands, to make money. Like,
I'm waiting for it to bleed into politics. It's still not really.
But that's want to talk about gatekeepers. That's the point. Campaign finance, right? You need to have X. You know, half of the people in the House of Representatives are millionaires. Half of the people in the Senate are millionaires.
Yeah.
Right. And they have the connections to be able to get that sort of money. I mean, I think, you know, the optimism is important. But, you know, as you say in your book, our responsibility is to get everyone onto the playing field with the skills they need to succeed. And I guess my question for you is, what are those skills? What are the things that we need to do to ensure that the internet fulfills its promise?
And we want answers. Engrave this.
You're getting them. You're getting them, baby. This is going to be. This is. I'm going to have to announce my congressional race here.
I'll vote.
Okay. So first and foremost, this is at a very granular level. But first and foremost, we really do have millions of Americans who don't even have internet access. Whether they live in rural America and are still using dial-up connections, remember those?
Amazing, man.
Or whether they are simply because of price and because of lack of competition. Like, you've got literally, I think, 6 months ago, there's a New York Times piece about kids who are going to McDonald's for the Wi-Fi because they are poor kids, and the only place that they could afford it would be coming to McDonald's. If we think about the internet like we think about electricity and potable drinking water as utilities, which I think if we think electricity is important for all Americans to at least have some reasonable chance of being able to get
running water,
we need the internet to get to a place where it is something, a utility that every American has a reasonable chance to get, and it's not right now. So that's one, is internet access. And that's kind of the foundation. But on top of that comes the skills. So here's the mind job, okay? And this is gonna eventually get to the political side, but for the time being, right now, I've got about 80-90 companies that I invest in, and I advise in maybe through YC probably like 400 or 500 more. So this is quite a few companies. Okay. Every single one of them is hiring right now. Every single one of them is hiring for well-paid jobs with great perks, working on things that are going to change the world, and it's almost all for developers. Now, there is this weird, weird dichotomy that exists because it's also a skill, writing code to build websites, the stuff that Steve, Mark Zuckerberg, all these people have done and do, is primarily done online. It's primarily actually largely self-taught through tutorials, through online communities. Like, Mark Zuckerberg learned how to build Facebook from a bunch of free tutorials online that were available back in 2004 and that are even better now in 2013. So we have this extremely valuable skill on the one hand that is also very freely available, but we're not doing a good enough job connecting the dots because, you know, this is obviously not something that everyone is going to be able to just pick up and start. I mean, they can physically. This can be done assuming that the connection is taken care of. But it's more than just, hey, just dropping a bunch of tutorials in front of a kid. The entire, like, STEM side of curricula, science, technology, engineering, and math is something we've not really put a lot of focus into, and I know it's gotten sexy, I guess, in the last 5-10 years. But we basically have this risk where what is already a giant wealth gap in this country is incredibly exacerbated, because there's a whole other class of kids coming up who do not have the skills for the 21st century. And by that, it's coming down to computer fluency. At the highest levels, it is programming, but who just aren't even there. And what the repercussions are is that, you know, like I said, it's only on the internet can a company start with a dude in a bus station and a laptop and be Dropbox 5 years later and worth billions of dollars. Like, that, you don't need any factories. You don't need hundreds or thousands of employees. Like, it takes code. And the upside is, yes, you can create great wealth and amazing things a lot faster than you ever could, but you also do it with fewer people, right? There are fewer employees along the way. And if you can't, or sorry, if you can, and for those who will, they're going to end up having tremendous success a lot faster than they would have before. And for those who can't, they are going to fall further behind faster than ever before.
In the interest of full disclosure, I come from an ed background. I wrote
a
book.
So but solve this, please.
Well, and that's the thing. I think that's the interesting thing. Very often what people talk about is they talk about STEM, teaching science, technology, engineering, and math, right? And I think the mistake of that is that, for example, I was a biochemistry major at Harvard, right? So I have a science background. Computer programming is terrifying to me, right? And that's what you're really, really dealing with. The barrier... Well,
you're
I mean,
smart.
That's... No, I mean, you the could... point is I could, but what I'm saying is that the barriers that we're dealing with, they're not really educational. They're not really technological. They're psychological. Mm. It's about what do people believe about their own intelligence and what do they believe that they do, because all of those tutorials are available. There are now a lot of really great resources for teaching yourself, and actually I've dabbled in some of this. Like W3Schools.org is a great resource. Yeah. There are lots and lots and lots of great resources for teaching yourself programming. But what you really, really, really have to do is basically teach what, you know, Carol Dweck, who's at Stanford, calls a growth mindset. Do you believe that, you know, you have a fixed level of ability in something, or do you believe that you're capable of figuring out anything that's required?
Mm.
You know, and I think that's what we really need. And I think the, you know, the big mistake is these problems are trying to be solved legislatively, and they need to be solved culturally. We need to change what we've believed about intelligence for the last 150 years.
He wrote a great book called The Straight A Conspiracy about that. The thesis being that the worst idea you can have is that people are born smart. Because
dude, I'm on. I feel you, man.
Yeah,
this is good. I'm gonna wait. Let me get this book.
Yeah, it's called The Straight A Conspiracy. It's written by Hunter Motz, my buddy here, and Katie O'Brien, and it's great, man. You guys really targeted high school kids, but it should be, you know, it should be read by everybody. It's so important for young people to read to get to understand that idea, because the emotional state in which you approach something has everything to do with how well you're going to learn something.
And that's the thing is that there are so many great resources online. The Khan Academy has done amazing things. You know, I mean, I can't remember off the top of my head what it is, but there are these two guys who are now basically doing this whole series of coding lessons, and they're super short. They're very smart. It's like a minute or two per lesson. And you can really work your way through that and, you know, build up an understanding of HTML, build up an understanding of Python, build up an understanding of Lisp. You can acquire whatever languages you want in order to be able to realize your idea. But the barrier for people is really believing that you can do
that. Alexis, like the thing is, for me, like as you guys are talking about this stuff, I glaze over too, because I go, I'm not learning any of that shit.
Exactly.
But it's fine because I have people, there are a lot of people that are into that who love to do that. I have other interests.
But
right?
Brian, here's where it really comes down to, right? The point is that would you ever say, I can't read, but it's okay, I have other people to do that for
right.
me.
Well, that's,
you can't participate in the global economy of the industrial age without literacy and numeracy. There's no doubt.
But I can. But I also think part of what commerce is about and free markets is you get somebody who's good at that to do that for you, and you delineate, you know, the authority, and there's people are good at one thing and other, you know, it's a collaborative effort.
Yeah,
as well,
absolutely.
Right?
But you are limited by, you know, I mean, that's the thing. You are limited by your technological illiteracy, right? In the sense that there's a lot of ideas that you have that you require a certain amount of capital for, or you require finding a partner for, because you can't realize that.
But there's a flip side, and that the flip side is that technology is becoming easier and easier to use and more user friendly.
Of course.
And so
of course.
So Alexis, when you speak to these, I love the way you've obviously been, you're very clear on what needs to be done, and I 100% agree with you. But when you speak to these college kids and you go to these 75 colleges, is that the message you're bringing to them, basically, that these are the challenges that we face, or what practical sort of solutions?
Yeah. Well, the one of the ways I've been starting things off, and as I kind of alluded to earlier, is that Steve and I did not know what we were doing when we got started. And I would argue most quote-unquote experts don't really know what they're doing.
Yeah.
We have a little bit more experience. We've got some insight to whatever, but it is, you've said it much more articulately, but like, it really is this acceptance to, like, once you've figured out how to learn online, and once you sort of been imbued, and I see this happen in Y Combinator, basically I want this to happen as early as possible. And I'll be the first to admit I don't have the stones or the courage to be an actual educator. But once that happens and you see this switch flip in a person, it is amazing. Because all of a sudden now, you know, she's encountering something new and is like, all right, I can hack this. I can figure this out. I've never done this before, but there is a resource online that's going to teach me how to use Final Cut. You know, I'm gonna figure out, and I'm gonna suck at first. Like, there's a good Adventure Time quote about it. Sucking is the first step to being kind of good at something.
Right, right. Of course.
It's embracing that. Yeah. You need to embrace that, and it's terrifying because, yes, you know, you can much easier. It's much easier now to make that crappy first podcast and put it online, and actually have people potentially see it and tell you how crappy it is. But like, that's life.
Yeah,
like, and now. You know, the sooner they can start doing that, the better. And you know, frankly, the sooner they can also see more role models doing it, or more, like, there are organizations, amazing organizations. I've been spending a lot of time hyping Black Girls Code for the last like six months, and it's just doing amazing stuff because it's going to schools as it's an after school group and saying, like, no, really, you guys are going to make Android apps, you're going to develop games, and then you're going to have it on your phone. And so when you go into school the next week, you're actually going to be able to show your classmates, like, look what I built.
This is crazy, because I'm so afraid of that stuff, dude.
But that's the thing.
And it's so funny, because I literally always look at guys who can write code as just a group of people, not only who are going to have all the power, but I don't have, at least I'm funny. Look, dude, come to my show and I promise you I'll make you laugh. That's the only thing I have to offer. And hopefully you people up on high will give me some money. You'll fling a bone my way the table, from your scraps. Maybe some crumbs will fall.
But that's the thing is that so many of these emotional barriers that are erected, you know, whether it's because of your ethnicity, whether it's because of, oh, this field is intimidating, or whatever. I mean, that's the stuff that we really, really need to strip away because so many great resources are already available online. And, you know, step one is making those resources available, and that's done. Mm-hmm. Step zero is creating the mindset that enables people to take advantage
of
those resources.
That's been your mission. I love that about, you know, Hunter. That's what Hunter's passionate about, what he wrote the book about, you know, and I think you do a really good job in the book of explaining and arguing for that point of view. It's actually been it's a very important idea, man. You know,
I just ordered a copy.
Good man. Good man.
Straight A Conspiracy.
Yeah. It's great.
But I mean, yeah, I think what you're doing is so important. And I think, you know, especially that lesson that you're talking about, you know, really embracing sucking and not knowing what the F you're doing is so important.
I also like that you're inherently, I can tell, I swear to God, I could feel this before I talked to you, but just from reading, you know, your interviews and the book, and you are inherently a very good person. It's so obvious that you want to make the world a better place. You're like this, you know, you've made a lot of money and stuff.
Not really.
He's safe. Yeah, he's not good. He's not very nice to his servants. But other than
they can make, once they stopped making eye contact with me, everything was fine.
Exactly. There are rules in my household.
In the house of Ohan.
In the house of Ohan. Exactly. In the house of Ohan, no one is to look me in the eye.
It keeps order.
And I mean, I think that's the other great thing is that really, that does come through so much in the book. I mean, you know, you're very humble. I mean, for lack of a better word.
Well, because the idea of the tycoon or the rich, you know, whatever, has always been the gray-haired guy with the helicopter and the huge house. And there's infrastructure, there's scaffolding that comes with the idea of I've made a lot of money in the business world, and all of that, like we were talking about, all of those things are becoming arcane. They're all turning on their
sides. I mean, you know, all of the little cartoons that you have in the book, the bread pig. I mean, it's so great. Yeah. It's so great. It's so much fun.
Oh, good. Well, I look, and I also put that in there mostly to cover my ass. In case people didn't like the book, like I say, it's still a coloring book. You can hand it to a child or a childlike adult, and they can have a good time.
That's
with it.
Irony, the blanket of irony. It protects you.
But look, it is so easy to be optimistic, at least from my opinion, because I get to meet people every day who are doing amazing things, doing such cool things. And they wouldn't have in a pre-internet world. And I just want as many people to be doing awesome stuff as possible so that I can have better stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
I want better music in the world. I want better comedy. I want better companies. And companies are the for-profit side, that's the hook in, because that obviously gets people excited.
Yeah.
But I think while the next list of the Forbes list, I think, of the richest whatever people. This century, it's going to have a lot more makers on it. It's going to have far fewer MBAs. It's going to have far more people, whether they're developers or not, who are actually the creators themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think inherent in that is a different kind of approach. I mean, I'm really generalizing here, but fuck it. It's a different kind of worldview.
Yeah.
Because you have to know, like, when you're coming up, let's say there's some comedian who's coming up right now. Like, she's going to remember the feeling of the first time some random person across the internet responded to one of her bits or so, sent a tweet to her and said, I'm your biggest fan. And she's going to remember coming up with a very different relationship to her fans than the more manufactured entertainers of the past. And then it's going to feel more intimate because it is more intimate because it's a direct line of communication that scales the globe. And then if you take it back to business, like, no one can honestly feel like they have succeeded in business online without the support of so many nameless people who built the open source software, which allows me and Steve to start a company from an apartment. Like, open source made all of this possible, and that is all donated brilliance, right? Donated code to the world.
Yeah, it's like a collective. It's like a neural net, a collective consciousness. You're drinking from the brain trough, you know? God, I'm so good with metaphors, dude. God.
Brian.
And the brain trough is vast, right?
Triple threat does not do Brian Callen justice.
Say, dude,
you know what I mean?
Write that in the code, Ohanian.
But it would have been, think of the tycoons of the last century and by and large, certainly before that, and by and large, it was a lot easier for them to think, oh, well, of course, this was me, this was, you know, because they were the robber barons or the inheritors of status or being able to get in because they knew the right gatekeepers or their dads were friends with the gatekeepers or, you know, it was, I think, a lot easier to delude oneself into thinking that, oh, yes, my success is a direct result of me and only me. Mm-hmm. And I really hope that means the next generation of people in power, and we can bring this back to politics too, are actually aware of the fact that, no, fuck you, it never was just you. Great things don't happen just because one particular person just gets a message from Zeus implanted in their heads, and then voila, things happen. Like, there have always been so many other things, factors, luck, chance, people, whatever, that played into it. And I hope that it means a different kind of attitude. I hope it means just better.
Well,
people.
I think it already is.
Yeah,
man.
Absolutely.
I think you're definitely doing your part for that, man. There's no question. And, and I don't know who this theoretical female comedian you're talking about, because usually girls are not that funny. Here's the thing. I'm kidding.
Christopher Hitchens over here.
No, I'm joking. I got a lot of friends. Amy Schumer and Whitney Cummings are all my friends.
Amy Poehler.
Amy Poehler is amazing. They're all my friends.
Tina Fey. Wow.
Tina Fey is amazing.
I got such a crush on her. Amy Poehler's been my friend forever. And I got plenty of women that I'm friends with, like Rachel Harris, some great people, like whether it's Jane Lynch is a friend of mine. I mean, I'm friends with some of the funniest women in the world. And so I'm obviously kidding when I say that. But Tina Fey, I have such a – I love her. I have an inappropriate crush on Tina Fey.
Oh, yes, that is.
And Bossy Pants is awesome. Yeah.
Bossy Pants. She's just so funny.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough of that.
Brian just came back from the bathroom.
I should also give a shout out to a very funny woman who set this all up. Lauren Bennett, who is awesome.
Lauren Bennett, ladies and gentlemen. Lauren Bennett, thank you for making all of this possible.
And I think the other thing, too, is that if you look at our generation, there's a real change in terms of what our priorities are, what we want to achieve. I mean, you know, people are more and more competing less for, you know, how many billions of dollars did you make, and rather how big of a dent did you make in the universe? You know what I mean? Did you really make it, you know? Because even I think it's fascinating, you know, I went to school with Mark Zuckerberg, didn't know him really.
Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah, but it's interesting because you know I work with a lot of teenagers, and you look at the way that they look at Mark Zuckerberg, and they're kind of not that impressed that he's a billionaire. You know what I mean? Because the point is that they're like, yeah, but what did you really do? And then you tell them about someone like the guys who started Kiva.org, which is that, you know, amazing microfinance site that you referenced earlier, and that we had Bob Harris on to talk about.
Yeah.
And they're like so blown away by that. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. Well, that's the other thing that I think is interesting about the sort of equality of consumption. You know, and talk about this a little bit, because you need a certain amount of money. You need a house and all that. But, you know, most of us, if I gave you a lot of money, like I was with my buddy Todd Phillips, who wrote and directed The Hangover, and he's made lots and lots of money. But Todd is using the same computer I am. He's wearing the same clothes I am. He's basically driving the same car. I just leased the Passat turbo diesel, which gets 40 miles to the gallon.
I've got a Golf turbo diesel.
There you go. My car, it
great mileage.
It's great mileage. Cost me $415 a month, and it is as good a car as any on the road, including a safe, and it's got pickup, and it's all I need. So,
sponsored by Volkswagen.
What's that?
Yeah, it is sponsored by Volkswagen.
Yeah, exactly.
The people's automobile.
The people's automobile. But the point I'm making is that it's becoming easier and easier to live a very comfortable life with less money. Technology is making it so we have access to the things that we actually really need. And so when you made a lot of money, but how different did your life? I'm sure you bought a nicer house, and I'm sure you got better tickets at the Redskins. But
my skin's tickets definitely upgraded.
Yeah, but you travel differently and stuff, I'm sure, and you eat at nice restaurants without thinking about it. But overall, you know, you still have to fill the next 70 years of your life. And yes, money's going to make things more comfortable and buy you, I suppose, more privacy and time, maybe. But don't you feel that, you know, the responsibility still lays on you to kind of, there are a lot of things that money in today's day and age are not going to change. You've still got to keep yourself occupied. And I doubt, how many trinkets can you buy at the end of the day? Right?
Oh, yeah. I am so lucky, because the one upside to everything that my mom, my dad, and I, we all went through while she was dealing with her illness, the upside of that happening to a 22-year-old was that I got perspective into what people actually care about when they are thinking about the end of their life. Right. And it is never, right? So it's like, hey, congratulations, 22-year-old. You now have the perspective of an 85-year-old. But it's a gift, because I have never questioned, and I try to impress this upon all my friends and even random strangers sometimes, because no one will be on their deathbed clutching, except for those weird pharaohs that they were on to the, whatever, clutching those possessions for the afterlife. None of those things will matter. It'll be experiences with the people you care about and the things that you have done. And those are the things that you will care most about. And so I've been lucky, because I never really felt that way before, and I certainly don't feel that way after. And it's kind of liberating, because, you know, you start talking to, what was it, lottery ticket winners. There's a TED Talk about this, how lottery ticket winners are paraplegic.
Yeah.
Yes, okay,
yeah.
Right? Or quadriplegic. Like, yeah, all right, so we as humans, we're adaptable. And, you know, whether it's tremendous success or what is, you know, presumably perceived as tremendous misfortune that happens to us, we all kind of find a way to regulate. And,
yeah, we come back to a default, you know, or we create a synthetic happiness, basically.
Yeah, yeah. You know? And what makes me so sad is when I don't lose sleep over anything, but you read these stories of people, and there was one about the Valley maybe like 4 or 5 years ago, and it was talking about millionaires who felt insecure because they were surrounded by billionaires. I'm riffing on it, but you know, and it's just a matter of perspective, and so I don't. Like, it's just sad to have that much wealth and be that comfortable and still feel so insecure. And that, like, again, I don't lose sleep over this, but like, I don't ever want to be that person.
Yeah.
You don't cry at night about millionaires who feel insecure around billionaires.
But I hear what you're saying, man. That's exactly right.
And it's like, you know, at the end of the day, I don't ever want to be too comfortable. I want to feel like I'm still hungry and doing stuff. And I think this is, I mean, of the friends I have who, like yours, have been successful, I think nearly all of us still feel like the same person, still try to live basically the same lives, mostly because we're terrified of the alternative. The idea of excess and all that shit actually seems really terrible.
Yeah, man.
And so here's one more convention. Like, speaking of conventions that are stupid, and why the fuck do they exist? You know, maybe there will, you know, hopefully there won't be another, Cribs or Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. I'm sure there probably will be, but who knows?
Maybe it'll be
Lifestyles of like the Rich and Reasonable.
Exactly.
Rich, reasonable, and motivated to improve the world.
Motivated to keep making the world suck less. Let's make that go. That's a great motto.
Let's make the world suck less. I think that's the bottom line. The people we have on this podcast are usually people I think that make the world a better place. And I always have to thank Hunter for that because he's so good at finding guys like you. So where do you live, Alexis?
I live in Brooklyn.
All right. Well, the next time I'm in New York, you're going to come out to a show. I'll put you in the front row, kid.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and you can.
Yeah, you can be on the 50-yard line
so
and heckle.
Yeah, you can heckle.
You can heckle me the way you do the opposing teams, you son of a bitch.
Now you'll know
how the Ravens feel.
The book is Without Their Permission: How the 21st Century Will Be Made, Not Managed, by Alexis Ohanian from the son of Ohan. My friend, you're a treat. We appreciate you coming on.
Thank you. Thank you for the book recommendation, and thank you guys. I'm going to speak at NYU tonight. And I feel jazzed up. I'm awesome. I feel extra amped.
Awesome.
To get in front of a bunch of young, impressionable minds.
Damn right.
Damn
man.
Right.
Are you single? Are you a single man? Or you got a girl?
I have a girlfriend. Yes.
Okay. I was going to say at 30. If I was 30 and that rich, and I was speaking at colleges, I'd be the biggest degenerate scumbag on the planet.
Let me tell you my secret. Yeah. Ryan, you're going to appreciate this.
Yeah.
So I have a good friend of mine. Actually, so I'm still friends with all my childhood friends, these guys since kindergarten. And one of them has a younger brother who he's like 23, good-looking dude. He exercises like fucking 4 hours a day. So I told him, I was like, listen, Asa, you need to graduate community college. You really need to graduate community college. You're spending too much time at the gym. If you graduate, I will take you on this college bus tour. And you can do all the things that I'm not going to be doing on the bus tour.
That's
across
awesome.
75 universities. And you can be sure that dude graduated.
Oh, that's beautiful. And this is my stud assistant over here. He doesn't do a thing, but just I live vicariously through him.
Basically.
I'm the fly on the wall.
He's going to lift boxes and then tell me stories in the morning.
Yeah. Well, I what keeps me in line is California's divorce laws. All right. So there it is, ladies and gentlemen. My friend, thank you for joining us, man. You're awesome.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Tell NYU we say hi.
All right.
I don't know what that means.
It basically means that you would like to be the guy on the bus tour.
The 46-year-old degenerate who's pretending to be a lot younger than he is. You mean that guy?
Yeah, I'm a startup founder. Yeah, dude. Hey, look, there's room on the bus.
Dude, I dyed my beard the other day. I used Just for Men on my beard because I was gray. And I was like, I think the kids will identify with me better. I'm a loser. Right? God, it's so sad. All right, my friend. Thank you for making the world a better place, Alexis Ohanian.
Thank you. Thank you.
We'll see you later.
See you, man. See you guys.
Bye. Greatness.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Really again, great. Another great podcast, and thanks for listening. And he's awesome.
Yeah, really great.
It is the new millionaire. It's sort of this young dude who's a visionary, and, you know, I mean...
Well, and I mean, I think that's the thing, what he said about like solving his own problem, right? You're like, what doesn't work for me? And then you fix it and, you know.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Once again, I'll be in Houston Friday, Saturday, this Sunday. I don't even know if we're releasing this yet. And then I'm in Buffalo the 17th of October, the 18th and the 19th. And I think even the 20th. Let me see. God, I can't figure out the stupid... this new app for the new phone, the new whatever, it's annoying to me on my phone. I like my old iPhone.
Brian, but
program.
You can figure it out. There are tutorials online.
You're probably right. the 24th, the 25th, and the 26th, I'm in Calgary at Yuck Yucks. And there it is, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening to the Brian Callen / Hunter Motz show.
/ Catherine Hepburn show.
Yes, that's right. Catherine Hepburn, thank you very much to my producers, Rena and Mike Casantini. Rena, what's your last name? Rina
Volano.
Volano. That's right. Volano. Rina Volano.
Villano.
Villano. Rina Villano. Rina Marie Villano. My cousin Tini. All right. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Brian Callen Show. Be sure to visit briancallen.com for information about this episode as well as past and future episodes. You can follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Callen and like him on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/Brian Callen Comedy. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.